This is Audible.
Simon & Schuster Audio presents Halo, Smoke and Shadow by Kelly Gay, read by Scott Brick.
Part 1. Into the Fire. 1. New Time, Venezia, Cab System, January 2557. Today, she sold weapons to a hinge head. The small lot of spikers and carbines would keep her crew happy, her ship operational, and her informants eager for a piece of the pie. It was a lovely little circle of profit she'd created for herself. And Rion loved it. She was good at it. She'd forged her way to success and never hesitated to fight bare-knuckled to stay there. She was proud to call herself one of New Tyne's most notable salvagers. But success wasn't all golden. There were some sales, some transactions that left dark smudges somewhere deep inside her, where things like honor and integrity and loyalty lurked. Dark karmic tally marks that put a few kinks in that lovely little circle. Every time one of her lots sold to ex-Covenant, the nagging sense of betrayal didn't let up until she hiked herself down to Stavros's and had a few drinks. Her crew thought it was simply a ritual, a small way to celebrate yet another payday, another sign that their jobs were secure and going strong. But inside, behind the jokes and the smiles and the laughter, a sour taste lingered in Rion's throat. She wondered what he'd say if he knew, if he could see her now. Daddy's little girl all grown up, and on the wrong side of the law. Though these days, there wasn't much law to be found. And sides? In post-war, there were plenty of those to go around. Rion's side, or lack thereof, was neutrality. Her business depended on it. She stayed out of politics, religions, and rebellions. There was a time her family would have said that staying neutral was just as bad as choosing the wrong side. But times had changed, and family was just a memory. "All set," she said as the bank confirmation appeared on her compad. "Always a pleasure, Captain. Not as good as last month, but respectable." The prior month had been one of Rion's best paydays ever. A four-way bidding war for a small piece of Forerunner Navtech that she'd come across by chance in a small bazaar on Kamoya, one of Vitalievna's moons. The data board was damaged and the crystal chip smashed, but it hadn't seemed to matter. Forerunner tech and relics were always a hot commodity. Intel was hard to come by, so Rion spent much of her downtime digging in files and researching in places she shouldn't be, just to learn more about the ancient race. And then she'd found intel on her ticket to retirement, a device called a luminary, which would supposedly point the way to all sorts of interesting Forerunner salvage. Rion reached into her pocket, grabbed the flex card she'd put there, broke it in half, and placed the bright orange equivalent of 250 credits on the desk. Norfell glanced at the amount stamped on the surface, then lifted her large avian head. Clear membrane swept horizontally across her yellow eyes, the Kigyar version of a blink. She cocked her head, the tendons and muscles above her eyes pulling together into consideration. Nor placed the tip of her claw on the card, holding it there while she gazed at Rion, and then cackled. "I knew you'd bite." Despite their obvious differences, Rion and Noor understood each other and enjoyed a mutually beneficial relationship. Devious and cunning, Noor possessed a greed that was only exceeded by the high regard in which she held herself and her Tavoan lineage. She was an excellent strategist and knew that relations and good business were the key to keeping the money flowing. And the money was always flowing. After Noor's mate, Sav Fel, disappeared 4 years ago, Noor had created an empire on Venezia, a clearinghouse of post-war scrap and surplus. Salvagers brought in their goods. The clearinghouse catalogued them and took a percentage. And come the first day of every Venezian month, the items went up for auction. Everything from titanium A plating and molecular memory circuits to small arms and transport vessels. Noor ruled over her house with an iron claw and a set of craftily devised rules that everyone, salvager and buyer alike, abided by. Her clients included those from the industrial, tech, medical, and manufacturing sectors, along with ex-covenant, fringe and religious groups, rebels of one faction or another, and independent government militias. She was on the radar of every military group out there. Rion figured she was on a few herself. But mostly Noor's clearinghouse was left alone. One, because this was Venezia, and Venezia played by its own rules. And two, because Noor refused to move heavy ordnance of any kind. Rumor had it that her mate had gotten mixed up in trafficking something big, and it had cost him. "They will not be happy, your crew." Noor nodded toward the window, where Lessa and the new hire, Kip, waited outside by the truck, talking. "With the payday you just made, one would think a break is in order. I hear sundown is nice this time of year." "Sundown is nice any time of year," which Noor knew full well. "Breaks aren't really my thing, Noor. Just ask my crew." And they also wouldn't be happy to learn that Rion was about to use a good portion of their payday on the next operation. Words floating around about big scrap in one of the border systems. Rion gestured to the flex card on the desk. "Haven't sold my info away, have you?" Noor's high-pitched squawk grated over Rion's eardrums, making her wince. "You know I keep my word," Noor said. "Me and you, we have an agreement, yes? Have I ever broken it?" "Nope. Can't say that you have." The small downy feathers on the back of Noor's head ruffled, indicating she was incredibly proud and satisfied by the admission. Rion couldn't fault Noor for preening. Her information was always good. The old bird had informants across the entire Via Casalena trade route that had arisen between the Cab, Cordoba, Shaps, El Duros, and Sverdlovsk systems. In the past, Rion had been forced to wait for other salvagers to fail to deliver before Noor would then resell her precious intel at a more affordable price. When Rion kept returning successful when no one else was, her reputation and her bank account grew, and so had her business relationship with Noor. Noor opened a desk drawer and pushed the flex card inside. "It's not my information, but for this price, I send you to the one who possesses it. He is expecting you, I am sure. Get to it quick and you might end up rich as me. One day." Her beak clicked together as she gave a raspy chuckle. "But remember my rules, yes? No trouble." Now that was interesting. The familiar zing of possibility ran through Rion's veins. Had to be something controversial. Something big. Military, probably. Trouble to Noor meant heavy ordnance. And where there was heavy ordnance, there was usually a wealth of tech and surplus. Paranoid as usual, Noor didn't say the name aloud, but rather legibly scratched it onto a piece of paper with her claw, then handed it over. Rion read the scratch and lifted her brow. "Really?" Noor shrugged. "This had better be worth it." A chilly breeze tossed Rion's dark hair around her face as she headed for the truck. Gray clouds hovered over Newtyne's center. The soft glow of city lights emerging as day gave way to night was so warm and inviting that it almost made her long for a place with roots and a simpler life. Almost.
"So?"
Lessa pushed away from the hood of the truck with a heavy shiver in her voice. "How was the old bird today?" Rion shook her head at her young crew member, Next time, wear a jacket, Les. Or wait inside the truck. Long winter might be over, but those thin fatigues won't cut it for a few more months yet. I draw the line at 6 months of winter fatigues. Besides, we hardly stay long enough for the weather to matter much. Lessa ducked into the passenger seat. Lessa hadn't met a human or an alien she couldn't or wouldn't talk to. She was blessed with a friendly face, a beguiling smile, and a mop of tight blonde curls that never stayed tucked into her braid for very long. Out of necessity, the young woman had learned early on how to read people and use her looks and personality to their fullest advantage. While Lessa was charming the pants off an unlucky target, her younger brother Nico was somewhere nearby hacking into the target's compat. They made quite a team. And when they'd targeted Rione 2 years ago in the mining slums of Illyria, rather than turn them over to the local authorities, Rione had offered them a job. One of the smarter decisions she'd made in recent years. So, payday was good then. Lessa began fiddling with the heater as Kip squeezed his well-built frame into the back seat. Rione started the truck. Yeah, it was good. Just one more stop before we head back. She pulled out of the lot and then eased into traffic, wondering how to break the news. They'd been out 6 weeks on their last job, only returning today. The guys back at the ship had just unloaded a very nice stasis field generator for Nora's pickup crew. The last thing on their minds was jumping systems again. In the silence, Rione could feel Lessa's lengthy stare, and knew what was coming. Please tell me you didn't. Rione's wince affirmed Lessa's suspicions. Oh, great. Just great. You promised us some off-ship R&R. It's just intel, Les. It doesn't mean we have to take off right away. Lessa folded her arms over her chest and slumped in her seat. She blew a strand of hair from her face with a huff, and then suddenly turned in her seat to face Kip. When she says, just intel, she made air quotes with her fingers. That's captain speak, for we're right back to hauling ass across the Via Kesselina. Perfect. Just friggin' perfect. Well, I might as well pull the bandage off now, Rione said dryly, knowing Lessa was going to love this part. We're going to see Rouse. Rione tried not to laugh at the murderous glare that blazed from Lessa's eyes. But sometimes Les was such an easy mark. Swift to react, so full of young, passionate emotion. Having Lessa around was like having the little sister Rione had always wanted, complete with all the struggles that her childhood fantasies hadn't quite considered. In the rearview mirror, she caught Kip's grinning reflection and smiled back. Kip Silas was a decent guy with a calm, easygoing manner and enough muscle to get the tougher jobs done. It also didn't hurt that he was a walking data chip of seemingly every class of ship in the known universe. And as engineers went, he was a damn fine one, a definite step up. All in all, she was happy with the new recruit so far. The worst dive bar in New Tyne was tucked behind a one-story retail mall on the southern outskirts of the city. Despite the aging exterior, spotty electricity, and grungy interior, there were always vehicles in the lot and patrons at the bar. Looks promising, Kip commented with a decided lack of enthusiasm as they left the truck. When they approached the door, he paused at the sign nailed there. Tiny Birds. This is a joke, right? Unfortunately, it wasn't. In fact, it was quite literal. The smell of stale rum didn't bother Rione so much as the distinct powdery musk that burned the insides of her nose and stuck in the back of her throat. Dear God, Kip uttered as he got his first look at the cages hung from the ceiling rafters. Inside them, hundreds of small birds the color of the sun and blue sky. Rouse's obsession had overtaken the building long ago, but no one here seemed to mind. Tiny Bees held the usual mix of patrons, a collection of humans, mostly at the bar, Kigyar, who had taken up several tables along the far wall, and two Sangheili in the far corner. Rione headed for the table by the back room door where Rouse conducted business. As she came into the light of the bar, recognition passed between her and one of the guys seated there. Cottrell slipped off his bar stool, his eyes gleaming with drink and appreciation as they swept down Rione's body and back up again.
Baby, you're back.
For the 100th time. Not your baby, Cottrell. A leer stretched his mouth.
Man, aren't you a sight for sore eyes? Damn, girl, never seen fatigues look so fine. And to think I almost forgot what a hot piece of tail you look.
The gurgle that came from Cottrell's throat was intensely satisfying. Rione's grip on his scruffy neck tightened, the pressure making his bloodshot eyes bulge. Anger had ignited so fast that she'd reacted before her brain had a chance to catch up. Should have walked on by. Usually she did. But that particular phrase. She squeezed harder.
Anything else you want to say to me, Cottrell?
He shook his head.
I think the next time I walk in here, I don't know, hey, Captain, how you doing, will work just fine.
Sure, sure, works fine,
he rasped, clearly stunned by her reaction. Cottrell was all bark and no bite. Rion knew that, but reckless, volatile, lashing out. Rion had been accused of those things in the past, and rightly so. It had been a long time since she'd gotten this rattled, and it certainly wasn't her usual routine to play the badass. But Cottrell had said the wrong set of words. Words that instantly revived memories of another bar, another time into her mind quicker than a flashbang grenade. Dinner with Dad. Mom refused to take her as usual, but Jillian stepped up and offered. Jillian was fun and gorgeous and always game for anything. And Rione adored her. Her 5-year-old heart was beating so fast when they entered the lounge, so excited and nervous to see her father again. But it wasn't her dad who met them. It was that horrible lieutenant, drunk, eyes gleaming as he leered at Jillian and made those foul comments. Rione wasn't sure what it all meant, but she knew it was bad. And when he turned his eyes on her and said she'd grow up to be a fine piece of tail, Jillian had lost it and struck the guy. Rion never knew fear like that before, when the lieutenant shoved her aunt against the wall, his forearm on her throat, pressing hard, too hard. Then her father appeared like some avenging angel out of the ether, and, like her granddaddy was fond of saying, all hell broke loose.
Cap, Lessa said sharply under her breath, poking Rione in the rib. Rione!
Rione blinked, realizing she'd moved on from the bar and was now standing in front of Rouse's table. And of course, Rouse was watching her with his typical knowing, almost sage-like gaze. It was a look Rione knew well, and one she found highly disconcerting. Clearing her throat and giving the old man a tight smile, she slid into the booth as Rouse pulled his data pad over and made a few swipes before pushing it across the table. With a practiced eye, Rione examined the screen.
This the only image you have?
He nodded.
It's clearly a ship. What kind?
Rouse shrugged and sat back with a twinkle in his eye.
Remains to be seen.
Your job to find out, Salvager, not mine. My price is 40,000 credits for the location and 25% a sale.
Rouse tried, but he was a horrible negotiator. Rione's attention returned to the blurry image on the screen. It could have easily been mistaken for one of the many jagged gray rocks jutting up from the snow. But to a trained eye, the lines were unmistakable. 10,000 and 10%. Rouse held her gaze for a long moment, and Rione had to bite her tongue to keep from smiling.
30 and 20, he said,
obviously enjoying himself. She slid the data pad back.
The wreck is old, probably picked clean 2 decades ago, and depending on the location,
It could cost more to get there than it's worth, which means I need my credits. Offer stands at 10. She rubbed her cheek and took some time to think. Time she didn't really need. I would, however, be willing to cut you a deal on the sale end, though.
Say, 15?
10,000 credits and 15%.
He thought it over for a minute, then nodded slowly.
I do see your point. The location is quite a hike. All right, Captain. We have a deal.
Rione parked in the lot near the hangar bay where the Ace of Spades was docked, then hiked up a flight of stairs to catch the elevator to E-level. Ace was a gorgeous ship. 7 years in the making, she was a sleek Mariner-class transport ship refitted with so many bells and whistles that it made her one of a kind. Rione had no idea what the crew did with their own credits, but everything she made went back into the next job and from there into Ace. Her Pride and Joy had an advanced passive sensor array, a military-grade slipspace drive, 2 pivoting fusion engines on each wing, 6 thrusters, a sensor baffling suite, and already souped-up nav and comm systems that Nico had worked his tech magic upon. There wasn't much the ship needed anymore, though a smart AI would be nice. You guys are never going to believe where we're going, Lessa called as she jogged up the ramp and into the cargo hold. Rione crossed the hold and headed for the steps. Cade was sitting one story up on the catwalk, performing maintenance on the track system. He stopped working as Rione looked up at him. Meeting in the mess in 15, she told him. He gave her a curt nod, and then returned to the job at hand. That was Cade, all business. He was steady, reliable, and got the job done. The kind of man who didn't say much. But when he did, you tended to listen. A former Marine, he brought order and efficiency to their small crew, and was often the voice of reason when Rione wanted to run full tilt and push their operation to the limits. 15 minutes later, the crew was seated around the mess table and Rione laid it all out for them. They might piss and moan about the lack of R&R, but in the end, they were like her. No one could resist a score. The ship we're after is huge, Rione said. I'm guessing old freighter, possibly military. We won't know until we get there. But if this thing hasn't been picked over yet... Money in the bank, young Nico said with a cocky grin, linking his slim fingers behind his head and leaning back in his chair. Can't beat that. Kip glanced at him with a confused frown. Unless it's military. He looked up at Rione. Right? I mean, the UNSC's salvage directive states that... Yeah, we're all familiar, Lessa interrupted, rolling her eyes. Report your find, claim your reward, and let their military salvage crew take over, blah, blah, blah. The comical part is they think that way out here, we actually give a damn. Where was the UNSC when we needed them? They show up when it's convenient for them and expect us to tremble at the might of Earth's grand military. She snorted and eased back down in her seat. Not happening. This is the Outer Colonies, Kip, Nico added. You know as well as the rest of us that they can't and don't control everything. Hell, they have a hard enough time keeping control of what's left of the colonies these days. They should be glad we're out there recovering their goods. Cade was leaning back in his chair, arms folded over his chest, observing the conversation in his usual stoic manner. He didn't have the same outward disgust as Lessa and Nico, but he had his own set of conflicts when it came to the military and the war. He'd been honorably discharged from the Marines, but his return to civilian life hadn't gone so well. There hadn't been a home or a family to return to. Only glass. Kilometers and kilometers of glass. Rione met his somber gaze. Once, they were like Lessa and Nico. But somewhere along the way, they'd moved beyond passionate debates on wars and politics, and put their energy and loyalty into the only thing they could count on. Themselves. The UNSC leaves most salvagers alone, Rione told Kip, taking control of the conversation. We're not smugglers. We hunt tech, metals, and small arms, whether that be UNSC, Covenant, or civilian. She'd had this conversation with Kip when she hired him, but maybe she hadn't been completely clear in this regard. We don't bring large arms and WMDs to market. Any military group is more than welcome to come to the clearinghouse and buy back their wreckage. I know for a fact the UNSC keeps a buyer shacked up in New Tyne just for that purpose. Probably cheaper for them to buy at auction than to pay the costs of their own salvagers and scouts. The point is, we get our fee either way. And if we find that wreck is military and there's a data core or nuke on board, you better believe I'll report it. It's a good job, Kip, Cade told him. Stop worrying. Cap is fair and we make a decent living. Better than most out here.
I did my research on her, Kip replied.
Wouldn't be here otherwise. He shifted in his chair to study Rion, his lips twitching into a smile. Good reputation. 85% success rate. Best salvage ship out there. Not bad for a 32-year-old military brat from Earth.
Suck up!
Nico coughed into his hand. She'd hardly considered herself a military brat, but Rion didn't bother enlightening him. Instead, she shrugged it off. You trying to butter me up, rookie? Because flattery gets you extra rations. She couldn't fault him for looking her up. She'd done the same to him, though more extensively than he'd ever know.
So what's our destination? Cade asked.
Actanis 45. Rion leaned over and pressed the small flat pad integrated into the center of the table's surface. A holographic star map appeared. Rion began zooming in on the star system until a large blue planet came into focus. We'll bypass the planet. It's uninhabited, so we'll have no worries there. She turned the view slightly and stopped on the planet's moon. This is our target, Aero. It's tidally locked to the planet, but there's a narrow twilight ring that supports a small settlement. Our target is approximately 56 kilometers away from the twilight ring on the dark side of the moon. Location couldn't be better. Too cold for habitation, but close enough to the ring that our winter gear should suffice. According to Rouse, the settlement has one communication satellite, two transport ships, and very little defense capability. As far as entering their airspace, we're good. They won't know we're there, and we'll have plenty of time to do our jobs.
That's on the edge of the inner colonies. A border system. A long way off our usual route, Cade said, thoughtfully, leaning forward in his chair, completely focused on the map. You sure about this?
Rion met with a pair of grim eyes, those of a man who had seen war and knew more than anyone the price of taking risks, of jumping systems, and hunting salvage that others would fight and kill for.
Yeah, I'm sure. It'll take a while, but it'll be worth it. After a hard workout and an even harder sparring round with Cade, Rion hit the shower and then dressed in casual gear before returning to her quarters with a towel slung around her shoulders. Her muscles were weak and shaky. She'd pushed herself hard, working out her demons. The usual. Sitting down at her small desk, she stared off into nothing for a moment. The demons were still there, stronger than ever. They'd left Venezian airspace and jumped an hour ago. And for the first time since seeing the grainy image on Rouse's datapad, she allowed herself to consider yet again the possibility. She ran her hands down her face and let out a weary sigh. How long was she going to keep doing this to herself? How long would she let the past haunt her? Forever, it felt like. She'd been searching for ghosts since she was 6 years old. Since her grandfather had sat her down and told her that her father had been lost. That's all. Just lost. What did that mean, exactly? What the hell did that mean? To a child, those words had been utterly confounding. How many millions of families across the galaxy had been torn apart like hers? Fathers, mothers, sons, daughters. So many consumed by war. So many MIA and KIA. The list was unimaginable. How did you bury a man who was lost? How did you grieve? Or move on? Voices of her family, of her pediatrician and psychologist echoed in her mind, putting terms and labels on her pain, like childhood traumatic grief, PTSD, anxiety. How had she grieved? She'd built an entire life and profession on the foundation of loss. Salvager. Leon shook her head and gave a tired laugh. Salvager. Her whole life spent searching, pushing ever onward, jumping from system to system, planet to planet, one wreck after another, looking for a ghost ship. Somewhere along the way it had become routine, the drive to find answers eventually muted by days, years, decades, until her job was simply a job, a way of life. It had been a while since she'd thought about him. She pulled open her desk drawer and retrieved her favorite holostill, setting the flat chip on the table and turning it on. And there he was. That cocky grin on his face always made her smile. Even now that she was a grown woman, he seemed larger than life. He'd been her hero, her protector, a rugged, capable kind of man, and a Marine through and through. With a heavy breath, Rion placed the image back in her desk. The data chip was there, too, containing all of the messages he'd sent home for her. Sometimes, when she really wanted to torture herself, she'd listen to them. But she'd had enough for one day. 2. Aero, Actanis 45 system. The Ace of Spades settled into geosynchronous orbit above the dark side of Aero. The twilight ring was just visible, a gray-blue haze outlining the moon's circumference. Have you located our target, Les? That's a big ol' affirmative, Captain. I have temp readings, too. You guys ready for this? Nico swiveled in his calm chair, his knees bent and his feet tucked under his bottom. You mean ready to have my balls frozen off? No, not really. Cade grunted in agreement. Hear, hear. 50 below 0. Woo, hoo, Nico responded as dully as he could. It's a balmy 75 and blustery in the ring, Lessa added, ignoring Nico. Les and I will set her down, Rion told them. The rest of you head to the locker room and suit up. Lessa swiveled in her chair to face Nico as he got up. Don't forget your earmuffs, little brother. She laughed as he shot a rude gesture behind his back. When he was gone, she returned to the job at hand. Winds are looking bad down there. From her position at main, Rion monitored their progress as Ace broke Atmo, keeping an eye on Lessa as the young woman navigated the ship. Lessa was learning and improving with every mission, and soon Rion would be able to rely on her more often. Adjust thrusters and keep us on target the best you can. The closer they came to the surface, the more Ace was pushed around. A kilometer out, things calmed down and the ship settled, but they'd been moved off target by 2 clicks. Sorry, boss. Winds were rough. You did fine. Correct your course and get us back on track. Lessa plugged in coordinates and then rose slightly in her seat to get a better look at the landscape and the wreckage below. It's pretty, isn't it, the snow? The wreckage sure blends in. As they descended, Rion got a nice view of the bow, which jutted out of the snow at a 35-degree angle. Small pockets of ice and snow had built up all over the hull, stuck in the angles and lines of the ship's design. Ace's reverse thrusters engaged and they eased down next to the solemn metal giant, its hull filling the viewport as they descended. An icy shiver ran down Rion's spine as the telltale emblem of wingtips appeared, rising up from the clinging ice and snow. There was no mistaking even a portion of that symbol. United Nations Space Command. Not his ship. The lines are all wrong. Lessa had gone silent. The chatter from the guys down in the locker room had stopped. No doubt Nico had turned on the bulletin board so they could see the feed. War had touched all their lives. They'd all experienced loss. They all had scars. Looking back, Rion realized how strange and surreal war could be to a child. Confusing, chaotic, frustrating. And her family had always tried to make life appear as normal as possible, pretending everything was going to be all right. Her young mind had known it wasn't all right. Her father being lost wasn't all right. Entire colonies being glassed wasn't all right. Rion's anger and conflict had begun at such an early age. Hating the military because they refused to share information about her father, yet feeling pride in her father and all the soldiers out there fighting, in the absolute dogged determination of her race to survive. Looking at this wreckage now made Rion realize she hadn't really reconciled anything from her past. Like carrion creatures, they were about to pick clean this beautiful old warship. There was some guilt in that. And yet this was all she had. The war was over, and people had to make a living. But sometimes, some days, she wasn't sure of right from wrong anymore. Her chest felt tight. Another dark smudge. Another karmic tally mark.
60 seconds, Lessa quietly said.
Rion moved her hands in a familiar pattern over her control panel. Landing gear engaged. Captain. It was Cade's deep voice. As Lessa went through shutdown procedures, Rion transferred control of Ace to her wrist comm. Yeah, Cade, she answered, getting up and following Lessa from the bridge. How do you want to play this? He cleared his throat. If there are casualties. Lessa stopped on the stairs, hands on the railing, and glanced over her shoulder. Rion was struck by how young Lessa seemed in that moment. She didn't look 22.
But more like a little girl, one who'd seen her fair share of casualties.
Despite the fact that they were salvagers, they rarely found remains. On the few occasions they had, it wasn't on a mass scale. There was no procedure or protocol for it. And yet, she was the captain. Her crew would look to her to do the right thing. We'll take a look around, see what we've got, and go from there. She might be a carrion bird, but she wasn't heartless, and she sure as hell wasn't keen on working a burial ground. The staging bay, which had been dubbed the locker room a long time ago, was equipped with an impressive array of gear for virtually any type of known weather and terrain. Rion walked past the crew, found her locker, and pulled out her gear. Once she was ready, she grabbed her helmet and slid it over her head, then called for comm check. 3 checks replied when there should have been 4. Kip, you good?
1 sec, Cade said, grabbing Kip's forearm and lifting his wrist comm pad. Hitting a set of commands that showed Kip how to link communications and his HUD together with the rest of the crew. Visual?
Yep, got it. Thanks, Cade.
Cade nodded, then smacked Nico's helmet as the kid walked by. Don't forget your plasma cutters this time, yeah? Lessa led Kip to the carts, showing him how to release the cart and activate its grav plates. Once everyone was equipped with a cart and their tool bags, they were good to go. The airlock disengaged and the hangar door came down slowly, the cold sweeping inside and bringing with it a swirl of snow. All right, kids, Cade said. Time to pick and strip.
Hey, Cade? This bring back memories?
If Rion was close enough, she would have hit Nico hard for such a dumb question.
Lessa, however, was close enough to do it for her.
Ow! What was that for? He was a Marine, you know,
Nico said under his breath.
Just asking.
Yeah, Cade's calm voice came over the comms. It brings back memories, kid.
You're a moron, Nick, Lessa muttered.
Once they were outside, standing in front of the wreckage, the sheer size of the ship stunned them all into silence. The impact of it took Rion's breath away. She'd never seen anything like it.
I know what this is, Kip said with awe. It's a Halcyon-class cruiser.
All heads turned to him.
You're sure?
Rione was already scanning the hull with her compad and waiting for verification.
You don't need to scan it, Kip answered. I had models of this thing when I was a kid. Wow. Never thought I'd see one in the flesh.
Nico, run a radiation check. If there are still nukes on this thing, I want to know immediately.
Roger that, Cap.
At least we don't have to worry about the engines, Kip said,
turning to the section of ship rising from ground level. They're gone.
I'm not getting any readings, Nico told them. Probably used them up in whatever battle this old girl saw.
We'll enter from the break over there, Rione said, moving forward. As they came around the hull, a massive gaping mouth rose stories above them.
That's not a break. This thing's been cut in half, Nico said.
A ship this size, Kip started. I'd say what's left here is a quarter of it, maybe.
Look at the plating, Lessa said. It's not jagged at all.
Plasma damage, Cade told her. Stuff can boil metal. Looks like she got beamed in, too.
Everyone pull up schematics, and watch your step. Kip and I will head for the bridge and see what's left of comms, nav, and weapon systems. Cade, you head for the armory. Looks like there were several on this class of ship. Should be one or two near the bridge. Lessa and Nico, you take the med bay and cryo.
Decades of snow had built up, filling in the gouge the ship had left in the ground and covering what was probably several collapsed decks. It looked to Rione like they were entering the mouth of a giant cave. It took Rione and Kip 45 minutes to get to the bridge, having to backtrack several times until they found a passable route, which Rione had marked with sensors. So far, no casualties discovered.
They could have abandoned ship in time, Kip said, echoing her own thoughts. She'd have to report it, whether there were casualties or not. The families of the crew deserved to know what happened.
Blast doors are down, Kip said as they approached the bridge. Look, the ship is the Roman Blue, Captain. The designation and ship's emblem were imprinted above the control panel near the door.
You read that, Nico? R-O-M-A-N space B-L-U-E, Rione said.
Searching now, he replied.
Kip turned to her.
What now?
Any luck on the armory, Cade?
One sec.
Yep. Looks like a decent payload.
His breath huffed over the comm as he moved around. After a few metallic bangs, he reported,
Thermite paste. Body armor. Jetpacks. Some small arms, rifles, and heavy ordnance.
Leave the heavies for the military and pack up the rest. Les, how's it looking your way?
Not bad, Cap. Medbay's got some nice SFGs, biofoam, the usual. Lots of damage, though. Gonna see if the pharmacy is intact. Might be some salvageables there, depending on how some of this stuff fares in cold weather.
Nico?
Cryo's in bad shape. Place is huge. A few pods we can take. Looks like some were ejected. Control panels look good. I'll see what else I can find.
And Cap, there's nothing on chatter about the Roman Blue. She's a ghost ship.
Kip, head to Nico's location and give him a hand with those pods.
Kip hesitated for a moment, the light emanating from his HUD illuminating his features.
You gonna report it?
The way he was looking at her made her uncomfortable, like he was judging her, like he was some self-appointed moral compass.
Yeah, rookie, I'm going to report it.
He dipped his head, then made his way down the corridor. Rione watched him go.
Yes, she'd report it. But she had a feeling the UNSC would never tell the families a damn thing. They'd let sleeping dogs lie.
Whatever line they'd fed loved ones originally. KIA, MIA, would probably still stand. Why open old wounds?
Because there were people like her who'd spent their entire lives unable to move on, always wondering, always searching.
standing on this ship? She could just as well have been standing on her father's vessel.
Gripped with the need to know more, Rione told the crew, "I'm headed to the captain's quarters."
She wanted information, if only for everyone else who'd been denied it. The war was over. There was no reason to hide the resting place of the Roman Blue.
After she reported it and the UNSC took control of the site, Rione would give them enough time to collect their goods and then she'd release the intel. She had to crawl through bent metal to get inside the quarters. Typical space, living and dining area, private bath, and two bedrooms. Debris littered the floor, like a giant hand had lifted the compartments, shook them, and set everything back down again. Her boots crunched metal and glass. The wind howled through an opening beyond one of the compartment walls. A picture frame caught her eye. As she picked it up, glass bits fell onto the floor. Two young boys stared back at her, their arms around each other. Rione set the picture down and made for the overturned table. Some of its wires were torn, but the comm cables were still attached, disappearing through the floor. She righted the heavy table and examined the large integrated screen on its surface. The screen was busted, but she set to work dismantling the panel and then searched inside the casing for a data chip.
There you are.
She took the chip and placed it in her comm pad. A list of dates began pouring down the screen. Personal log dates of Captain William S. Webb. The first being March 10th, 2531.
Holy shit. Rione's knees went weak. She grabbed the table for support.
Early 2531 was the last time she'd heard from her dad.
Voices immediately came over the comm, asking if she was all right.
What?
Yeah, fine. I'm fine. Just stubbed my toe.
She said the first thing that came to mind. As the chatter died down, Rione pressed the date on the comm. She'd never get another chance like this to get inside the UNSC.
Crumbs. She was looking for crumbs.
Captain's Log, March 10th, 2531. A slim gentleman appeared on the screen, with gaunt eyes and lines across his forehead. His hair was light and speckled with gray. There was a fatalistic look in his expression, a weariness about him that made Rione instantly sad. He went through the formalities of stating his name and rank, and ran through the day's events.
A month of repairs before we can return to the fleet. Captain Hood has been reassigned to the frigate Burlington in a fleet support role for the time being as I take command of the ship. I'm sure he'll make his way back to the front line soon. God knows we need all the talent we can get.
The Admiral insisted I stay and witness the dressing down he gave to the captain.
It was harsh, but deserved.
The captain shook his head, obviously troubled a great deal by the event.
Disobeying orders and engaging the radiant perception near Arcadia was reckless and foolish. He had no chance of defeating that destroyer. If Hood had picked up that log buoy and returned as ordered,
the captain's shoulders sank a little.
That buoy is out there somewhere, lost, picked up by the destroyer.
He sighed deeply, the weight of the war resting heavily on his shoulders.
Godspeed to the folks on the Spirit of Fire. May they find their way home.
Shock flared inside Rione, sending her stumbling back. She ended up sitting amid the debris, disoriented, her breath stalled in her lungs.
Her eyes began to sting. She gasped, remembering to breathe.
Her pulse was wild, heart thundering so loud it filled her eardrums. Somewhere in the din, she heard voices. The crew, no doubt, hearing the commotion. Unsure of what to do, she scrambled to her feet as a wave of pure adrenaline hit her.
Rione closed her eyes and willed herself to calm down as the ship suddenly shuddered hard, sending her flying forward straight into the table.
Pain shot through her hip as a loud metallic groan echoed through the Roman Blue. Quickly, she grabbed the data chip from her wrist and shoved it into her pocket. It was the most valuable thing she'd ever found in all her years of searching, and she'd be damned if she'd lose it now.
What the hell was that? She yelled over the comm.
The crew's responses came quick and jumbled. Cade shouted above them all, "That's ordnance! Someone's firing on the ship!" Another round slammed into the Roman blue, and the entire floor where Rione stood vibrated, then dropped a few centimeters. Damn it. It was going to give. She took off at a dead run for the mangled door, diving through the small hole she'd crawled through just as the floor in the captain's quarters collapsed. Her momentum sent her rolling across the corridor, where she banged against the wall. Her temper ignited as she got up. "I swear if they hit my ship, I'm going to kill someone! Head out, people! Now!" As Rione rushed down the wrecked corridor, a knot formed in the pit of her stomach, because she knew she was the weak link, the farthest away from Ace. The crew was close together and would make it back at least 15 to 20 minutes before she could. And that was a lifetime right now. "Get to Ace, go dark, and get her airborne as soon as you're all on board." "Not without you," Cade's voice came over the comm with a ring of finality. "Not a chance in hell."
"Appreciate the love and all."
She dodged a metal plate as it fell from the ceiling. "But if they hit her, we've lost everything." She righted herself and started running again.
"I can fend for myself."
"Lie low."
"You know I can. We've done this before, Cade, more times than I can count. I'll send a signal when I'm clear."
Several negatives filled her calm until Rione shouted at them to knock it off, get their heads on straight, do their goddamn jobs, and save her ship. The comms finally went silent, and all Rione could hear were the sounds of heavy breathing and pings of metal and shuffling.
"Damn it, Forge."
Cade's voice broke the quiet. Rione smiled. He only used her last name when he was pissed.
"I'll be waiting for your signal."
"Counting on it." Purpose shot through her like lightning. She wasn't dying today. Not now. Not when she'd found a crumb. No, not a crumb, she thought, as laughter bubbled up from some crazy part of her. She'd found a lead to a goddamn ship.
"Spirit of Fire? I'm coming for you.
Dad,
I'm coming for you."
Part 2. Luck Be a Lady. 3. Aero, Ectanus 45 System. The Roman blue shuddered again. Temperature warnings flashed across Rione's HUD as a superheated shockwave rolled through the vessel. The sizzle of burning metal hissed through her audio. Whoever was firing on the wrecked UNSC cruiser had gone from ordnance to plasma. Not something she saw every day. Over the years, she'd imagined the many ways she might meet her end. But melting had never been on the list. In a matter of minutes, her cold suit had gone from asset to potential death trap. The thing wasn't designed to handle high exterior temperatures. It was meant to keep heat in. And if she didn't clear the Roman blue soon, she could add roasting alive to her growing list, if the next blast didn't do her in first. Metal blistered and groaned, eerie notes ringing through the passageways as walls and floors turned molten and supports gave way, entire sections crashing through levels. The walkway beneath Rione's feet began to dip starboard. Her pulse beat wildly as she ran, dodging and ducking through an ever-changing maze of twisted and jagged alloy.
One more corridor to go.
She slipped around a corner and grabbed at a damaged railing. It broke from the bulkhead, sending her sliding backward and plowing into the opposite wall. Her neck snapped back and a crack echoed in her ears. A quick glance at the HUD showed a small fracture in the exterior shell of her helmet. But the damage was confined to the outer layer, one of many layers made of titanium nanocomposite fibers and plating. And those, thank God, were still intact. As the remains of the Roman blue continued its dip starboard, Rione drew on all her reserves and sprinted as fast as the cold suit would allow for the broken stairwell, counting each step in her head, knowing it'd take some time for the plasma cannon overhead to gear up for another blast. Instead of taking the stairs one tread at a time, She leapt the distance and hit the landing with a thud. The weakened stairwell shuddered, slowly dropping away behind her as she bolted for the shafts of welcome daylight, piercing through the wreckage. The white glare from the moon's wintry surface was blinding, but not so much that she couldn't see what lay ahead. A few meters more, and the deck simply disappeared into open space. She didn't slow down. Out was out, no matter how far she'd fall. And if she was going to meet the ground, it would be as far away from the Roman blue as possible. At the edge of the deck, Rion shoved off with everything she had and sailed into the air. On the bright side, the drop was only one story. On the not-so-bright side, controlling her descent in the heavy suit was impossible. The earth and snow rose up to meet her with a vicious slap that stole her breath and sent her forehead slamming into her display. Her vision went black. Alarms rang in her ears, and the taste of blood from a bitten lip trickled into her mouth. With a groan, she rolled onto her back and blinked tightly several times until her vision cleared, only to find the HUD blitzing in and out. All around her, clouds drifted upward. No, not clouds. It was steam. From her suit. A pained laugh bubbled in her throat. She'd come very close to catching fire after all. The force of the ordnance explosions and plasma beam had pushed burning debris and snow melt skyward, creating a strange fall of sleet and metal rain. Tiny fragments and ice tapped against her helmet, the sound mingling with the hiss of snow as bigger fragments met the frigid surface. With a wince, Rion sat up and brushed a few embers off her suit. Just as the HUD corrected itself, a faint lavender glow began building in the clouds. Spurred by the telltale sign of heating plasma, Rion ignored the aches and pains, scrambled to her feet and took off through the freezing slush and mud, pumping her arms and not looking back. Her focus was on a large outcropping of rocks about 200 meters away. But the longer she ran, the farther away they seemed. "Please don't glass the moon. Please don't glass the moon." A thread of panic started to unwind, and she felt thrust back to a time when glassed planets were a horrifying reality. She had no idea who was attacking the Roman blue, or what capabilities they had, but she was praying like hell that the plasma beam was directed at a single target, and not the entire moon. Part of her wanted to break silence and call in Ace for immediate retrieval, but that was the anxious Rion talking. The scared Rion. The sane part of her knew the plasma beam would have been a hell of a lot more intense and encompassing if the intention was to glass Aero. It wouldn't make sense to use a concentrated beam on the Roman blue and then proceed with complete lunar destruction. Her lungs and throat were on fire, and her thighs and calves screamed as she trudged on, unable to go any faster than a quick, uneven jog. Finally, she slid around the cover of the rocks, crawled up under the outcropping, and tucked herself into a crevice. Unlike inside the Roman blue, there was no titanium A plating to take the brunt of the blast, no walls and levels and metal to absorb and mitigate some of the potential heat. Rion surveyed the vast snowy landscape through a narrow frame of rock, holding on to the hope that it wasn't the last view she ever saw. The world flashed violet, then white. Then the heat wave came, rolling over the landscape with a deep whoosh. The interior of her suit became sweltering. The temperature surge and the HUD's flashing alarms brought on a roll of nausea that had her shutting down visual and audio before closing her eyes and hoping for the best. When Rion opened her eyes, her view was gone, replaced by long, flash-frozen icicles barring the way out. She scooted away from the crevice and kicked at the icicles' thinner bottoms, breaking them enough to tummy-crawl out of her hiding spot. The ground had become ice, but she held on to the rocks, using them to pull herself to her feet and inch her way around the outcropping to get a good look at the Roman blue. Or rather, what was left of it. The former UNSC cruiser was nothing but a smoldering mess, large chunks of debris sticking up like metal bones through a glowing, molten